Hello, everyone, and welcome to Marxist Chloe, a podcast where we take a critical look at anime, but also more often probably a more fun look at anime. I'm your host, Eric Hobbs-Bond, and it's my co-host, The Angles Next Door.
Hello, everyone.
And today we're going to talk about the show that is the namesake of our podcast, in a way. Because, yes, there is Karl Marx and Marxism, but the real reason we named this podcast is...
because he looks so much like him. He just looks like it's uncanny. You got the beard.
Yes, there's a character named Marx in the show Black Clover, and he is our mascot.
He is our mascot, yes.
As our first episode of Marxist Clover, we thought we'd do a little dive into Black Clover.
And
so welcome aboard.
Welcome aboard. It is a fun conversation.
And obviously, yeah. This will have spoilers for Black Clover up to about episode 130-ish.
There will be references to future events, but very vague because Hobbs-Bond has not got to that point yet.
Black Clover. So, how would you describe the setting of Black Clover?
I would say it's a fantastical setting with fantastical characters. It's a fantasy world.
Not an isekai.
Not an isekai. I think what is important to understanding, it is a pre-industrial world. This isn't like a fairy tale world. That most interesting part is that there is a extremely fascinating train system, but that's for that's for another day. But it is fantasy. It has a very interesting hierarchy and way it's set up. You have the center is the Clover Kingdom. There are other kingdoms.
And the Clover Kingdom is comprised of three realms.
Okay.
You got the Noble Realm, where we have the nobles, and royals is also another class.
Yes, there's a lot to the royals and they're
There's like three families who count as royals, and the rest of the aristocracy are just the nobles. And then there's a commoner realm, which is more your urban poor.
Yeah, I would say so.
And then on the outer edges of the kingdom, we have the Forsaken Realm, which the name probably gives a hint to its condition, but it's where the peasants live. So this is the rural peasantry. The interesting thing about these class distinctions is that it's not just about the distribution of wealth in the kingdom, even though it is that too. Understanding that there is a hierarchy of average magic skill, where the royalty have the most magic, the nobles have a lot of magic, and then the commoners have some magic, and then the peasants don't really have much at all. The peasants have barely enough magic to do day-to-day things.
The greatest example is that a character named Sister Lily.
Sister Lily.
In the setting, we will talk about how there is a vague religious system that is really good in one direction, but is really not a lot in the other direction. But Sister Lily could summon a water fist to hit somebody. That sounds cool, but that's as much as we see.
That's pretty useful. I mean, Sister Lily, all her religiousness, whenever she's actually in danger, she ends up calling upon the main characters.
She does.
And says, oh, they will save us, which casts aspersions on her religious devotion.
Yes, the main characters being, I'm louder than any character has ever been in the history of anime.
Asta.
Asta la vista, baby. And then there is, He's just Yuno.
He's a stoic man.
He is a stoic man.
The reason we bring up the loudness with Asta is Asta's a great character, but it seems like a lot of general audience does not like him. And a lot of the complaints just seem to come down to he's loud.
And maybe we'll have an installment talking about defending Asta. This, as Hobbs-Bond said, this is more of a setting thing. So we have the three realms. Let's also go into the magic system to set this table for everything. So basically it's elemental magic. Everybody has access to one magic. Yes, for future readers, I do know one character. There's a few characters that break this rule. And one character has two grimoires, but we're not talking about that right now. But everybody is linked to a grimoire.
How does one get a grimoire in the world of Black Clover?
From my understanding, and it's been a while since I've rewatched the show, you basically, at the age of, is it 16, get access to your grimoire. You go to almost like a state facility where a grimoire chooses you.
Yeah, it's very much the wand chooses the wizard.
Yes, from Harry Potter.
And I think it's a lot younger than 16.
I'm taking a gander. Oh, 15. It's 15. It's 15 years old.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So at 15, you get your grimoire. And what are the different magic types? You have light magic, which is very rare, and not many characters in the show actually have it. Wind magic, water magic, fire magic.
And there's time magic, which only one character has.
There is, and his magic is very strange and technically not normal magic, but that's for a little bit later. There's also what's called the wacky, weird, like magic broke down and became abstract. Because there's technically like metal magic, there's writing magic, there's dream magic, and there's teleportation magic. So I was wrong earlier. It's not elemental based. Like, some of the core ones are elemental based, especially when we go into the royal family. A lot of their stuff is feels very core elemental stuff. Oh, but even within them, yeah, but basically
it's a very diverse magic.
Very diverse magic
ecosystem.
But you only have access to a single type of it.
So our main character, Asta,
mm-hmm.
does not have any magic, which makes him stand out, even among the peasants.
Yes.
He goes to the capital to join the Magic Knights, who are basically the military of this world. And is this a police state?
I was actually thinking about this over the past day. This would be a great thesis statement for the episode. Is Black Clover a police state? And the answer is yes. I think it is a police state.
So there are these squads of mm-hmm. magic knights who are the main...
They're civil servants. They're the ones that do, like, policing. And
yeah, they're basically a combination military police, which gives heavy martial law vibes. And the government is divided really curiously. There's a civilian government.
There's civilian government, yeah.
Which is a king.
Yeah.
And then there's a military leader known as the Wizard King, who's appointed among the knights. The show very much infers that we should want military governance, that is the preferable option.
Because this is in a pre-industrial world, this is in a sense like, it probably is more of a feudal government than it is anything else.
Yeah, it is actually really feudal.
But one thing about it is that it's like a feudal government with hardcore centralization.
It's so centralized. So yeah, it's not feudal in the sense that I don't know if any of the lords actually own specific land, do they?
I don't think so. If so, we have never gone into it. It feels all the nobles live in the noble realm. And the royals, we are going to get to them, have their own. They basically live in, like, the capital. I do also want to say that the Black Knight... Wait, that's what they're called? Wait, no, not that. The Royal Knights, or what are they called?
No, the Magic Knights.
Magic Knights, sorry.
Because I think the Royal Knights are the special squad.
That's such a squad. Black Knights are from Code Geass. And so they also are civil servants. Like, they also are, like, the weird, like, almost like a disaster relief people, too. Because, like, they are usually at the front lines to do, like cleanup in terms of disaster relief. There are usually relief workers as well, cleaning up
things. Yeah, they really are just a military corps that can be used for whatever purpose the government wants.
Yeah. And also, when we look at the government, there's some very strange things where the power is in the nobles. Like, there is a noble aspect of it that the show hasn't necessarily done a lot with. We do know that that you have to answer to the king. The king, they kind of make to be a buffoon, but he does have like a royal family around him. And these noble
advisors.
There's
three royal families.
Yeah.
And the king is from one of them. So it's kind of assumed that the kingship could travel between any of those three families.
Yes. Also, he has a really funny name. We will say that the timeline of Black Clover is really wacky and kind of weird, where there is like a large amount of time that goes by in this show, but there's like not from if like from a historical point of view, it is kind of confusing. Like, what is the history? Like, what is the history of the king, the other one, the Wizard King? Because our Wizard King is a guy by the name of Julius Novacrono, and it wasn't until really the movie that came out on Netflix a year or so ago that we had met other past Wizard Kings and Queens.
Well, we met one in the Elf Arc.
True, we did. Lumineer, yes. So, is this a police state, and is that bad?
The show really wants us to think it's a benevolent police state. Like, a police state run by a benevolent Wizard King.
Yeah, I would say, like, this makes a lot more comprehensive sense, because I'm also, like, a pretty decent knowledgeable guy when it comes to Naruto. There is a lot of parallels, and yes, we'll get that out of the way, yes, there are a lot of parallels to Naruto in this, and that its setup is, except in Naruto, the Hokage is the Hokage. There are the Daimos, we're not talking about them. I don't even want to say those people's names, because they're silly. But I think in Naruto, there is a weird city-state-esque aspect, and it doesn't really go into the management of everything, but like in this one, it feels very much like a feudal kingdom.
Yeah. So, as we explained, each class is associated with a certain level of magic.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing I like about this is the show explains why that happened.
Yeah.
There is an actual plot reason why the nobles got so much magic power.
Social Darwinism. That's how they did it.
The thing with a lot of fantasy settings and isekais is it's just natural to have the nobles have more magic.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't explain why that is, things start getting very eugenics very quickly.
It does, and we will eventually get in our opinions. Do we like a lot of the nobles? Yes. That's what the show wants you to believe.
See, the other comparison that I think about is Ascendance of a Bookworm, where, again, that's a show where there's a magic system, and there is a specific reason why only the nobles have magic, which is having magic as a child is dangerous to your health, and only nobles have the resources to survive through childhood with magic. And so it's not that peasants don't have magic in Ascendance of a Bookworm, it's just that they all die when they're young.
Mm-hmm.
So I appreciate a show that will make that effort to explain that. So Black Clover, the nobles basically stole the magic.
Yeah, and we have been...
We have, just
interrupt you really quick. We have been introduced to the other kingdoms, and it is very much the survival of the fittest, most powerful one is usually at the top.
So is the magic power in these kingdoms, is it inherited?
in some sense, like, your magic does feel like you inherit, you get some, like, if your parent had this type of magic, you have this type of magic.
Like, the three royal families each have their own distinctive type of magic that seems to have just been passed down the generations.
Yeah, because you have, like, the Vermilions have, like, fire-based, and then the Silvas have, like, a very much, like, a liquid-based state.
Yes.
Of magic.
Whether it's water or, like, liquid metal?
Yeah, because mercury and water, yeah.
Which is quite a juxtaposition.
I mean, I do like the aspect, because they talk about, with the elf arc, that magic was, in its beginning, felt very, like, connected to the earth. We're going to get to that in just a second. And then as time went on, it kind of mutates and almost changes with the times, where it starts becoming more abstract.
Yeah. So that is a eugenics aspect to this, where, yes, magic is inherited.
Yes, there is. But it's not like your grimoire, which we went back to, which we talked about earlier, because the grimoire is really fascinating. You don't just get your dead parents' grimoire.
That is true. Again, the grimoire chooses.
The grimoire chooses, and also the grimoire has this weird, where new spells can appear in the grimoire in each generation, but also the spells have to reveal themselves to you.
And they get revealed as you get stronger.
As you get stronger, yes.
So, I guess the other point is that there is an urban versus rural divide in this kingdom.
Yeah.
So we have the Forsaken Realm, which is farmers,
mm-hmm.
and they mostly eat potatoes, or tatoes.
Tatoes, yeah.
And the show doesn't really do much differentiating between the people in the Common Realm and the people in the Forsaken Realm.
Yeah, no, it doesn't.
The people in the Commonwealth are slightly better off, but they're still poor.
Yeah.
But we see them, the Commonwealth is all cities and towns.
Mm-hmm. And, like, very rarely do we see peasant farmers. You know, like, we don't really see, it's only, like, in the filler arcs it feels like we actually see, like, farmers farming.
Yeah, the farmers in the Forsaken Realm, actually, this is not a very scientific way of measuring this, but I took a look at the Black Clover Wikia page, the way it's organized in the Black Clover Wikia. So it's divided between royals, nobles, commoners, and peasants. And if you look through the number of characters that have been profiled on the Wikia for each of them, between the royals, nobles, and commoners, they all have about 20 to 30 characters. The peasants have 8 characters profiled. So even though this is a show about two peasants rising to the top, we don't actually get to meet peasants that often.
No, we don't. Then if they are, they don't get speaking lines. Or they're like, thank you for your help, knight.
Yes. Which, I mean, it is fair, because it is about Asta and Yuno going to this place that where there aren't a lot of people like them.
And for our class revolution people, technically, meritocracy has only been around for, like, not even a generation.
Yes, I think it was literally a generation ago that the first peasant to get into the Magic Knights got in.
Yes, when we're saying a generation ago, we mean, like, less than 20 years.
We mean, like, the dad of one of the
characters. Yes, when the character was, like, in his mid-single digits. And that in itself creates this illusion, and why I think it might be easy to say that this is meritocracy, and it's really not.
There are characters who certainly aspire to a meritocracy.
Yes, yes.
But it isn't there yet. And actually, that kind of ties in very well with a quote I want to bring up.
Okay.
The Clover Kingdom. In this place where magic is everything, there lives one boy who was born without it. His name is Asta. His strength and determination helped him become a Magic Knight. And despite the many challenges he faces, he aims for the top and refuses to give up. Rich or poor, royalty or commoner, Asta believes anyone can shine. His mission is to prove that to the whole world and to become the next Wizard King.
Okay, so that was the intro to, at the beginning of each episode. It's not the first intro that the show has, but it's the episode intro that appears after the Elf arc, so about 100 episodes in. And so my question with this is Asta advocating a Booker T. Washington approach to liberation?
Yes. I cannot see it as anything else.
Let's expand on what Booker we mean by Booker T. Washington approach.
Basically working within the system and the status quo to get change.
And this idea of creating role models.
Creating role models, that is correct, yes.
That if you have extraordinary individuals from the
peasantry or
the subjugated class, if you have spectacular people from subjugated communities who rise up to be educated and to rise up to positions of notability. Of honor. That's the way to create liberation. And we compare this to the W.E.B. Du Bois method, which is acknowledging that even if you have individuals like escape the limitations that they're put into,
mm-hmm.
It's not going to change the minds of the oppressors.
I mean, you're breaking my brain open right now because you're making me realize, oh my god, there is not a single person that dislikes this system except for a colonized people that were eradicated, and those are the only people that have ever risen up. There has never been a revolution. This also might be the fact that there is a lot of weird things in this show that make the setting so that this sort of subjugation can work. You have the fact that transit is not actually an issue in this show as much as it is in rural thing. So we didn't bring up the fact that there are brooms in this show. If you can use a broom, you can get, or your magic can help you travel. You can get from one place to the other very quickly. You can travel to the capital from almost any part of the Clover Kingdom within a day.
And you don't need to be Magic Knight level.
You do not.
In terms of your magical skill in order to ride these.
And that is a very major aspect of control of the police state. So like if an issue arises, you always can send your police to subjugate like a rebellion of some sort. Of course, Black Clover never does talk about a rebellion of its style, and its endpoint very much feels like a... We'll probably talk about more in a different episode when we have further, but like this love of the status quo and like a perfect status quo, which is what I feel the endpoint of the series is editing towards with the villain, is this obsession with basically no class distinction, but yet an unmoving world. But that's outside of our scope for right now. We're not going to touch upon that.
But the transportation thing is interesting.
I think it's very interesting.
Because it goes both ways.
It goes both ways.
Because everything is so divided and segregated.
Yes, it is.
And you would expect in a world where transportation is easier,
mm-hmm.
that there would be more intermingling of people in the Forsaken Realm and people in the Common Realm. And that there would be maybe more opportunities provided just by having easy connections.
Yeah, and also because we're kind of hiding it, but because like the nobles are so powerful, you never really feel that you could go against them because they could put you down quickly.
Right, in a way, magic is what's keeping the social system going.
Yeah, it's a very intriguing system that even before putting this out, I hadn't thought about the hegemonic forces that probably are keeping this system working. And I think that is what's special about Black Clover, is that everything kind of works into itself and makes it make sense within the Clover Kingdom. outside the Clover Kingdom, it gets a little weird and strange.
So going to our quote, I do want to be kind to Asta.
I do too.
Because if you are the individual trying to make your way in the world, a Booker T. Washington approach isn't the worst thing. Because it is what he himself can control.
Yes.
Like, he wants to reach the top. So while he's there, he might as well be an example.
Yes.
Yes, maybe it would be nicer if he, instead of focusing on mobility, he thinks about, like, the actual dismantling of these hierarchies.
Yeah.
But that's something he can only do once he's in power, and he is a teenager, so...
He is a teenager.
But the show doesn't really show another way of overcoming these hierarchies other than just rising up and just going, like, just not rising, just going up the social ladder.
Yeah, it very much, and I think what a lot of good anime does, it is about, especially shonen stuff, it is about overcoming oppression in subtle ways or adversity. It's about overcoming adversity and the journey of being kind of an outcast and being nothing and then proving to people that you are something and kind of having the everyman or every person type of approach. It is very noble. I mean, and the anti-hierarchy, this isn't like One Piece, which is like an anarchist show that is just doesn't really like hierarchy whatsoever. This is, but it also, it has, it, I know it doesn't want to compare Naruto. It is weird in that there's really no enacting change. There's no discussion about what's, if there's anything wrong with the world. It's more about proving the singular thing that Asta is good. Somebody like Asta deserves to exist in this world and be happy.
Yeah, and it's also another trope of shonen that if you're powerful, or you become powerful, you need to learn to be compassionate.
Yes, I think that's very important.
And be like a just steward.
And I think that is, if we are getting out of like, there's not a really great class thing, I think that there is an emphasis on empathy and on compassion.
Yeah, which again, it's not a model of liberation that provides agency to the people at the bottom.
No.
But that is kind of the way shonen works.
But it's also one of those things that we don't want like the nobles who allowed meritocracy to happen to step back and be like take away the rights of people being in the Magic Knights, not being able to be like commoners anymore. Like that was a step in the right direction for how this state works.
Yeah. So again, it's the progress that's mapped out in the show is institutions slowly allowing commoners into their ranks.
Yes, that is one aspect of the show.
Yeah. And in this way, Asta's magical power is philosophically interesting because we just established that magic is like the vehicle that keeps this hierarchy in place.
Yes.
And Asta's magic power is he negates magic.
Yes.
So anything he touches with his sword, he cancels out the magic effects. Because, like, on a metaphorical level, Asta is breaking down magic.
Yes.
Which is what is unequal about this world.
That is correct. That is a beautiful point. He breaks through because he has none and breaks down the walls that divide us.
Yes. Now, whether he would actually unmake a magic system, probably not.
No, I don't think the show, from what I from mangas at this point, I don't want to diss the series. I am going to diss the series. I don't know if it is capable of doing that anymore.
I mean, when you make a shonen anime about magic, you kind of had to keep the magic in.
Yeah, but I mean, like breaking down like society, making this amazing post-royal
dream world or a monarchy that works 100% correctly, which is probably what's going to end up happening.
Yeah, because even if Asta's at the top, he's probably going to have to go a bit Toussaint Louverture.
Yeah.
And you know, send the peasants back to farm those potatoes.
Yes.
Someone's got to farm the potatoes.
And some people find that fulfilling.
I mean, Asta certainly likes eating them.
He does. And he convinces his rich girlfriend to like them.
It's potatoes are being gentrified.
They are. Move over. It's we're gonna break the way that the whole kingdom is down. The Forsaken realm is gonna be the noble realm, and then,
how do you measure wealth in your life? Do you measure it in money, in magic, or how much potatoes you get to eat?
I mean, do you like? There's a point where almost that a lot of characters are like, what is this? What are potatoes? I don't want to eat it. It's a poor person's food.
And I'm not eating that ratatouille.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't watched Ratatouille in a while, but yes.
So, I guess the next point I want to talk about is the magic captain. So, each of the magic knight squads has a captain leading them.
Yeah.
And they are overwhelmingly headed by aristocrats, as you could imagine.
Yep.
And in fact, there's like a couple of magic knight squads that are basically like directly associated with certain royal families.
Yeah, the Crimson Lions and the
people who play with Mercury and Water.
Yes.
So let's just zoom in on the two commoners who are magic knight captains.
Yeah.
We got Yami, mm-hmm. and we got Jack the Ripper.
Mm-hmm.
Was he just known as Jack?
I think he's Jack.
Okay.
Because sometimes our fan lore overrides what we remember.
Yeah, we don't know what's our fanon and what's canon. But in this case, Jack the Ripper is such a fascinating man.
It's what happens if you give a murderer a job and you're like, what if you took all of your bad impulses to something productive?
He just wants to slice things.
He doesn't want to slice things.
And yes, in another world, he would have been like slicing people in the back streets of London.
Maybe.
But instead of being a Victorian serial killer, he's a magic knight captain who gets to slice things for good.
Yes. What is good? Well, when we meet him, they're slicing up bandits and criminals.
Slicing up the things that police state says it's okay to slice up.
Yes, it's always very important.
We don't want him slicing up, you know, people with money or anything.
No, not at all. That would be bad.
But yeah, Jack the Ripper has a heart of gold.
He does. He's a good
minus guy. The impulse to slice, but you know, deep down, he's a nice guy.
He's a good guy. He is a fun character.
And then we have his best friend, or frenemy.
His ship, the best ship of the show.
His ship. It is a ship.
Yeah.
Yami. And Yami is from Japan.
He is from Japan, and
basically. From a foreign land.
And if you want me to remember what the place is called, I don't remember. I'm also a hot take for people that actually read this. I don't like that aspect of the story. I think it's very ponderous and hasn't gone anywhere interesting.
So Yami's is just a cool boss character, like the cool superior. He's the head of the squad that Asta's in, and he's just this wonderful motivational figure who also has a lot of digestive problems. And you know he gets serious when he drops his cigarette.
He does.
Which is almost never.
Yeah, he's quite fun.
But at one point in the story, the Wizard King announces budget cuts?
Yes.
I guess it's to do with the whole war effort going on and
the recovery effort.
Oh, yes, because...
And you're right, because there is a war effort. Because this is after they go to the Heart Kingdom and they're going to go to war with the Spade Kingdom.
No, I think this is before that.
Okay, maybe you're right.
Because this happens when the Black Bulls come in second in the star getting competition. It's when Yami and Jack the Ripper have their food contest, and Charlotte and Vanessa have their cosplay contest, where Asta's nun fetish is confirmed.
Yes.
So anyway, the Wizard King institutes budget cuts, where to save money, they cut the pay of the Magic Knight captains. And the Wizard King does not seem to understand the issue that this causes, because all the other Magic Knights captains, this doesn't really affect them.
Mm-hmm.
They don't rely on their salaries to make a living. And yet the only ones that does affect are the two commoners, Yami and Jack the Ripper.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of reminds me about how it was, like, in a way, an important innovation in the history of British Parliament when they started paying MPs.
Mm-hmm.
Because it meant you didn't have to be a leisure class citizen to be able to participate in politics.
Mm-hmm.
And this is kind of where, yeah, being a Magic Knight, you can force commoners out just by not paying.
Mm-hmm.
I do worry that since we are dissecting the show, that we are going to sound like we don't like this show. So I wanted to wind down the episode by talking about some of the things we love about the show. So Angles, what is there that to love about Black Clover?
I like that there is an arc about how elves got their magic stolen from them. I don't know if I completely like the idea that a demon is the one that kind of convinced the humans into stealing.
Right.
Stealing.
It's kind of a handy scapegoat for the humans.
It's kind of a handy scapegoat, but that is where...
Oh, the demons made us do it.
The demons made us do it, even though the royals, that definitely benefited off of this. Because, like, Lumineer, the OG Wizard King, did not benefit off of the magic being stolen. He was already, like, super OP and strong. But, like, a lot of the nobles get their power from that there are these elves who are... who are extremely rural, have a very elf-like kind of utopian type of society, but then they are just, in a sense, eradicated because of their power. And yeah, I really love that part of the show. I think it's really fascinating.
Another thing I wanted to talk about is the show has some amazing filler content.
Yes.
I mean, there's the little skits at the end called Petite Clover, or Clover Clips. Clover Clips is how it's called in the dub.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's called Petite Clover in the Japanese.
Sub. Yes. Yeah. And I think there's a strong reason to actually watch this in dub, because of the character Gordon.
Yeah.
He's one of the great characters, and has some great filler content in his own right.
Yeah.
But his whole thing is you can't really hear him.
Yeah.
He whispers under his breath. And the problem is, if you watch it in sub, you will read what he's saying in subs, which you're not really supposed to be able to hear him. So watching it in the dub preserves the surprise of figuring out what on earth has Gordon been saying this whole time.
Mm-hmm.
The character writing of the show is just really well done. Just, again, some great filler interactions and just also plot interactions.
There is... when we say there is that the setting makes sense, it's nice seeing that by the end of the show we understand the setting does come alive, and yeah, every character is very distinct. I just love these characters so much,
and the battle system really meshes the characters really well.
Yeah,
it's not like some shonens get into the pattern of each individual character squares off with one opponent. And Black Clover does a good job of showing people combining their abilities.
Mm-hmm.
And like creating a strategy based on their collective strengths.
Yeah.
So even if each character can only use one type of magic, there are so many different interesting combinations that can come out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the last thing I want to shout out is this show has some really good openings and EDs, particularly for a shonen series.
Yeah, definitely. And we will definitely talk about those in our versions of like having when we have short segments throughout this show about things we love about Black Clover. Maybe.
Okay, that wraps it up for the first episode of Marx's Clover. I'm Eric Hobbs Bond, and this is my co-host
Angles Next Door.
And thank you for watching. If you want to reach us, send a manifesto into marxistclover@gmail.com, and we'll see you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.